Available now from Graphic Audio.
You are Amanda Carter.
You are Anver Bajraktari. Do you have the items we discussed?
Come inside.
What's a Greek coin doing here? I thought these artifacts were Nepali. What the hell do you think you're doing?
There has been a change of plan.
I am Sergeant Panteras Katramados, and you are under arrest for trafficking in illicit antiquities.
Don't take me in yet. I was hired by the Japan Buddhist Federation to figure out why Greek coins are turning up in plunder from a Buddhist shrine in Nepal.
I accept your story, for now. But I shall keep an eye on you, Anya Creed.
It is said that shortly after Gotama's death, one of his disciples decided to exalt the Enlightened One in the heights of the world. The shrine could only be found by a quest. This is your path, Anya Creed. It is the road you must follow to find that which you seek.
We bring you news from our places, comrade. First, a meddling American woman named Anya Creed caused us to lose our last shipment to the Greek police. The good news is that the witch has come to Nepal.
How is it good news that this meddlesome Western woman has come here?
Because she's on the trail of the greatest treasure trove in the Himalayas. All we have to do is follow her, and she'll lead us to unimaginable wealth.
Press up. How much further?
Not far. Another hour or two.
That may be too long. They're getting close.
Storm clouds ahead. We shall be in it soon.
We have to keep moving!
There it is.
They pulled back. We should check out the cave.
Oh my god.
I cannot let you tell the world of this. I'll die first.
You're right about one thing. You will die.
You have given me a very great deal of trouble, Miss Creed. I am about to shoot you in the belly.
Rogue Angel 19, Seeker's Curse, in Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Blood and Honor. Narrated by Terence Aselford, with performances by David Coyne, Andy Clements, Richard Rowan, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nanette Savard, Michael John Casey, Katie Foster, Peter Stray, Eric Messner, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Danny Gavigan, Scott McCormick, Christopher Graybill, Yasmin Toison, Tim Getman, Colleen Delaney, and Mort Shelby. Blood and Honor, Part 1.
Prince, your reign of terror ends now. Behold the rainbow sword. Be gone, foul demon. You are defeated. Now do us all a favor and never return again. Yes, it is done. And thus did the demons of the Darkwood fall before me in the darkest hour of the Forest Kingdom. In that faraway land, I stood shoulder to shoulder with the noble King John and his heroic sons, Harold and Rupert, and the forces of darkness could not stand against us. The long night ended. The demon hordes were thrown down and destroyed, and the Forest Kingdom was saved. That was the way it had to be. For is it not written that evil cannot prevail against good, and that darkness shall always give way to the light? And that, my friends, is the true history of the great and wondrous High Warlock and his part in the destruction of the Darkwood. A tale of adventure and intrigue, honor and treachery, and the inevitable triumph of good over evil. My honored friends, the performance is at an end.
Smoke billowed up around the man and then drifted away to reveal the actor standing alone in the middle of the crude wooden stage, dressed once again in his simple, everyday clothes. The great Jordan smiled and bowed graciously. But all too quickly, his audience began to drift away, and only a few of them paused to drop a coin in his offerings bowl. Jordan waited until the last of his audience had left, and then he sat down on the edge of his stage and began wiping the makeup off his face with a piece of dirty rag. Without the carefully placed shadings and highlights, his face looked younger and softer and nowhere near as forbidding. His shoulders slumped wearily as the tiredness of the day caught up with him, and the air of mystery and command that had surrounded him on stage vanished like the illusion it was. The sword he'd used in his act poked him unmercifully in the ribs, and he pulled it out of the concealed sheath under his clothing. Seen up close, it was battered and nicked and not at all impressive. It was just a sword that had seen too much service in its time. Jordan shivered suddenly. Nights were falling earlier as the summer gave way to autumn and the rising wind had a cold edge. He glanced across at the smoldering demon, but the roughly carved prop had pretty much burned itself out. He'd have to do some more work on the demon. It still looked all right from a distance, but the spring that threw it out from behind the concealing piece of scenery must be getting rusty. This was the third time in a week that its timing had been off. Any later and the damned fireworks would have gone off first. The spring wasn't the only thing whose timing was off. He was getting too old for one-night stands in backwater towns. At 27, he was hardly an old man, but he just didn't have the stamina anymore to put up with an endless round of poor food, hard travel, and never enough sleep. He got to his feet, strapped the sword to his side, and walked unhurriedly over to the offerings bowl. For a moment, he allowed himself to hope, but when he looked, it was even worse than he'd expected. The dozen or so small copper coins barely covered the bottom of the bowl.
Oh, I'm rich.
Jordan emptied the coins into his purse and glumly hefted the trifling weight in his hand. Bannerwyck was only a small mill town deep in the desolate North Country, but he'd still looked for better takings than this. If things didn't improve soon, he'd have to go back to card sharping and picking pockets to make ends meet. He hadn't seen takings this bad since he first started out on the stage as a juvenile. Maybe he was losing his touch, or maybe his material was getting old. The war with the Demon Prince had ended 7 years ago. Jordan shook his head and tied his purse securely onto his belt. It wasn't him, and it wasn't his act. If truth be told, it was simply that times were hard in the Kingdom of Redheart. Money was scarce, and strolling players had become a luxury beyond the purses of most. It wasn't just Redheart, of course. Jordan had spent most of his professional life in Hillsdown. He'd known good times there. Not once had he ever thought he might one day be forced to leave the country of his birth by poor takings. He'd appeared 3 times before the Duke himself, and known the company of great men and their ladies. They'd been the first to name him the Great Jordan. He'd traveled widely, even to the court of the Forest Kingdom itself, though that was some time before the war against the Demon Prince. He hadn't been back since. The demons had been defeated, but not nearly as simply and easily as he made it sound in his performance as the High Warlock. The war had devastated the forest and much of the countries that bordered it. The land was slowly recovering, but there were those who said it would take a generation and more before trade fully recovered. In the meantime, Hillsdown and Redheart and the Forest Kingdom struggled to keep their heads above water and had little time or money to spare for the great players who had once touched the hearts of all who'd heard them. Jordan frowned as he tried to work out if he had enough money to buy provisions and to get drunk, and if not, which of the two was the more important. His mental arithmetic took a depressingly short time, and he scowled unhappily. It would have to be provisions. Bannerwick stood alone and isolated in the middle of Redheart's moorland, and it was a good 2 or 3 days' traveling to the next town. He could always pick up a few grouse along the way, but the local Margrave's men took a very dim view of poaching. When all was said and done, it might prove rather tricky trying to do his act with only one hand. No, it would have to be the provisions. Jordan looked about him at the squat little houses clustered around the narrow street of Bannerwick. How had he come to this? The stone and timber houses huddled side by side, as much for comfort as support. The rough and dirty walls were all much the same to look at, like so many defeated faces. Smoke curled wearily from the narrow chimney pots, and the bitter wind tugged at the tiled roofs as it came gusting in off the moors. The last light of evening was already fading away, and the main street was deserted. Country people awoke with the first light, worked while it lasted, and went to their beds when darkness fell. It was only Jordan's show that had kept them up this late. He supposed he should be flattered. They hadn't been a bad audience, all told. Of course, there had been a time, and not that long ago, when he'd been able to include real sorcery in his act. But that time was past. Hiring sorcerers was always expensive, and of the few spells that remained to him, most were slowly wearing out. Still, there was no denying he'd been in excellent form tonight. The times might be hard, but he was still the Great Jordan, and the High Warlock was one of his best roles. He'd always prided himself on his choice of roles. He'd played all the best parts in his time. Everyone from the fabled King Edward, who loved the deadly Night Witch, to the heroic Starlight Duke of Hillsdown, to the sad and tragic sheepminder, old Molly Metcalf. The Great Jordan was nothing, if not versatile. He'd played before lords and ladies, townspeople and villagers, and once even for a scar-faced man who claimed to be a prince in exile. Though he never actually said where he'd been exiled from. Jordan smiled, remembering. In those days, his bowl had known the heavy clunk of gold and silver and even precious jewels. His ears had rung to roars of joy and admiration from packed theaters and tearful pleas for just one more encore. But those days were over. The times had changed, and other names had risen to prominence as his had faded, and now he had to take his offerings where he could find them. The Great Jordan showing his act to a few gawking peasants for a handful of coppers. There was no justice in the world, or at least none a man could learn to live with. He shook his head. It was getting too cold to sit around brooding. He set about transferring his props and scenery to the back of his small caravan. He gathered up his stage lights and counted them carefully, twice, just to make sure none of them had disappeared with some unprincipled member of his audience. He stacked the lanterns and lamps in their proper places, and then went back for his stage. It was supposed to break easily into sections, but Jordan had to struggle with each square until he was red in the face and short of breath. His scowl deepened as he laced up the caravan's back flaps. He shouldn't have to do menial work like this. He was an actor, not a carpenter. Jordan smiled sourly. That was his past talking. Stars might not have to do scut work, but actors did, if they wanted to eat regularly. And if nothing else, exercise did help build a healthy appetite. He set off down the main street, looking for a tavern. Late as it was by country standards, the town inn would still be open. Such inns always were. He didn't care if the specialty of the house was broiled demon in a toadstool sauce. He was going to eat it and ask for seconds. Halfway down the narrow street, his nose detected the smell of hot cooking, and he followed it eagerly to a squat, grimy building that looked no different from any of the others, save for a roughly painted sign hanging over the door.
The Seven Stars. Worth a shot. Hello? Anybody home? Hello? Is there anybody here?
Hold on, hold on! I'm coming just a moment!
It's one of you people. What do you want?
Good evening, innkeeper. I find myself in need of a room and refreshment for the night, and I hope to satisfy that need at your splendid establishment. I fear my funds are somewhat depleted at the moment, but no doubt I can provide payment by entertaining your good customers with my songs and stories. How say you?
We don't take theatricals.
No. Listen, innkeep, I know I'm a bit short of the ready at the moment, but surely we can come to some sort of arrangement. It's going to be a bitter cold night tonight, friend.
We don't take theatricals. Now, hope it.
Why not? Oh, open this door, you son of a bitch, or I'll use my magic to make you even uglier than you already are. I'll give you fleas and boils and warts and piles. I'll give you warts on your piles. I'll shrink your manhood to an acorn and turn your nose inside out. Now open this bloody door!
The shutters opened above him, and Jordan caught a glimpse of a chamber pot.
Get the hint!
Well, the food didn't smell that good anyway. Ungrateful peasants! Don't know a class actor when they see one.
He started back down the street toward his caravan. It looked like he'd be sleeping with his props again, and that damned demon was starting to smell something fierce.
Huh? Who's there?
He scratched thoughtfully at his ribs, letting his hand drift casually down to the sword at his side. The sound had come from the nearby alley, but Jordan couldn't see anything in the darkness. Surely it was obvious to anyone with half the brains they were born with that this particular actor had nothing worth the effort of taking. But it was best to be wary. A starving man would murder for a crust of bread. Jordan's hand idly caressed the pommel of his sword, and he eased his weight onto his left foot so he could get at the throwing knife hidden in that boot if he had to. And if all else failed, there were always the flare pellets he kept concealed in his sleeves. They might not be quite as effective as they appeared on stage, but they were dramatic enough to give most footpads pause. He swallowed dryly and wished his hands would stop shaking. He was never any good in a crisis, particularly if there was a chance of violence.
Stay back! I've been trained in the deadly art of swordplay and I won't hesitate.
Easy, my dear sir. We mean you no harm. We only want to talk to you.
We. There were several. Jordan thought seriously about making a run for it. Whenever anyone started talking that politely, either they were intent on telling him something he really didn't want to know, or they wanted to sell him something. On the other hand, he wasn't that fast a runner at the best of times. Maybe he could bluff them. He held his head erect, took on the warrior stance he used when playing the ancient hero Sir Bors of Lion's March, and glared into the gloom of the alley.
Honest men do their talking in the light, not skulking in back alleys. Besides, I'm rather particular about who I talk to.
Oh, I think you'll talk with us, Jordan. We're here to offer you an acting role, a role beyond your wildest dreams and ambitions.
Jordan was still trying to come up with an answer to that when the three men stepped out of the alley mouth and into the fading light. Jordan backed away a step, but calmed down a little when they made no move to pursue him. He quickly resumed his warrior stance, hoping they hadn't noticed the lapse, and looked the three men over carefully from behind the haughtiest expression he could manage. The man in the middle was clearly a noble of some kind, for all his rough peasant's cloak and hood. His skin was pale and unweathered, and his hands were slender and delicate. Presumably this was the owner of the cultured voice. Jordan nodded to him warily, and the man bowed formally in return. He raised one hand and pushed back the hood of his cloak, revealing a hawk-like, unyielding face dominated by steady dark eyes and a grim, humorless smile. His black hair was brushed flat and heavily pomaded,
giving his pale skin a dull, unhealthy look. He was tall, at least 6'2", probably in his early 40s, and looked to be fashionably slim under his cloak. He wore a sword at his side, and Jordan had no doubt at all that this man would know how to use it. Even standing still and at rest, there was an air of barely contained menace about him that was unmistakable.
Well, are we going to stand here staring at each other all night, or are you going to introduce yourself?
I beg your pardon, Jordan. I am Count Roderick Crichton, advisor to King Malcolm of Redheart. These are my associates, the trader Robert Argent and Sir Gawain of Tower Rouge.
Jordan nodded to them all impartially and then sheathed his sword as an act of bravado. It seemed increasingly important to him that they shouldn't think they had him at a disadvantage. According to the Count's graceful gestures, the man to his left was Robert Argent. He was short and sturdy and wore a merchant's clothes. His stomach bulged out on either side of a wide leather belt. His peasant's cloak hung around him in drooping folds as though it had been meant for a much taller man. His face was broad and ruddy, with the broken-veined cheeks of the heavy drinker. His eyes were a pale blue and strangely dull and lifeless. His hair was straw yellow, cropped close to the skull. He looked to be in his late 30s, but the empty eyes made him seem much older. He wore a sword on his hip, but from the shiny newness of the scabbard, Jordan doubted the sword had seen much use. His eyes lingered on the man for a moment, though he wasn't sure why. There was just something about Argent, something cold. Sir Gawain stood to Count Roderick's right, leaning casually against the wall. Sir Gawain of Tower Rouge. Jordan had a feeling he knew the name from somewhere, but he couldn't place it. Maybe he was a minor hero from the war with the Demon Prince. He was tall and muscular, and though he had to be in his late 50s, his chest and shoulders were still impressively broad. Chainmail glinted under the peasant cloak, and Jordan caught a glimpse of a heavy-bladed hand axe at the man's side. His hair was iron gray and cut in a style that hadn't been fashionable for at least 10 years. His face was lined and weathered, and when he looked at Jordan, his eyes were dark and cynical. His scarred hands looked disturbingly powerful, and for all his apparent casualness, he was no more at ease than Jordan. Everything about Gawain shouted to the observant eye that this knight was a trained warrior and experienced in his craft. Jordan decided immediately that if these three men turned out to be villains after all, he'd better go for Sir Gawain first, and he'd better be bloody quick, because he wouldn't get a second chance.
You mentioned an acting role.
Oh, the greatest role you'll ever play.
What's the money like?
10,000 ducats.
Jordan kept his face calm with an effort. 10,000 ducats was more than he'd ever earned in a year, even at the peak of his career. And that was a long way behind him. 10,000 ducats. Oh, there had to be a catch.
Assuming, for the sake of argument, that I'm interested in this job, what kind of role would I be playing?
Nothing too difficult. Prince, the middle of three sons. There's a great deal of background information you'll have to learn by heart, but an actor of your reputation shouldn't have any trouble with that. After all, you are the Great Jordan. Is Jordan your real name, or would you prefer I used another offstage?
Jordan is the name I was given. I earned the rest.
I was most impressed with your performance this evening. Did you write the material yourself?
Of course. A strolling player has to be able to adapt his story to suit the level of his audience. Sometimes they want wit and eloquence. Sometimes they want conjuring and fireworks. It varies. Did you like my High Warlock? I created the character after extensive research, and I flatter myself I caught the essence of the man. Sure, he didn't actually wield the rainbow sword, but I'm only one man.
Nothing like him.
Is that so, Sir Gawain? Perhaps you'd care to tell me what he was really like.
He chased women and he drank too much.
He was a great sorcerer. Everybody said so. He saved the Forest Kingdom from the Demon Prince. All right, there were a few rumors about him, but there are always rumors. And besides, it makes for a better show my way.
Suit yourself. But you were playing a caricature. If we could return to the subject at hand, you haven't said yet if you'll accept the role, Sir Actor.
I'll take it. I've nothing better to do for the moment.
For 10,000 ducats, he'd have played the back end of a mummer's horse, complete with sound effects, but he wasn't going to tell them that. Maybe he could hit them for an advance. He looked at Count Roderick.
Well, my lord, shall we get down to business? What exactly is this role, and when do I start?
You start now. We want you to return with us to Castle Midnight and impersonate Prince Victor of Redheart.
Jordan's heart sank, and for a moment he wasn't sure whether to scream or faint.
You have got to be joking! Forget it! I'm not getting involved in any conspiracy to commit treason. I once saw a man hanged, drawn, and quartered. It took him 2 hours to die, and he only stopped screaming when his voice gave out.
No, there's no question of anything treasonable. Prince Victor knows all about this substitution and has agreed to it.
Jordan looked suspiciously at the three men before him. They all looked very serious. Sir Gawain had even pushed himself away from the wall to stand upright. Jordan noticed uneasily that the knight's right hand was now out of sight under his cloak, resting just where the hand axe had been. He turned his attention back to Count Roderick, mainly because it was less disturbing looking at him than it was at Sir Gawain. He gave the Count his best intimidating scowl and tucked his thumbs into his sword belt to stop his hands from shaking.
If the prince knows about this, then what? Oh, I get it. You want me to act as a decoy, a double to draw out an assassin. The deal is off. I'm an actor, not an archery target.
My dear fellow, I assure you, we wouldn't waste someone of your undoubted talents on a simple decoy's job. Allow me to explain the situation. Prince Victor is required by law and tradition to undergo a series of rituals shortly at Castle Midnight. Unfortunately, he is indisposed at present with a rather troublesome illness and is unable to perform the rituals. But if he doesn't appear, he'll lose his inheritance. So, we need someone who can act enough like the prince to take his place in public and perform the rituals. It's as simple as that.
Ah, I see.
He didn't believe for one moment that Roderick was telling him the whole truth, but for the time being, he might as well act as though he did. After all, if he'd learned anything as an actor, it was that the aristocracy hadn't a clue as to the real value of money. You could charge them extortionate amounts for performances, not to mention expenses, and they didn't even blink. If he played his cards right and watched his back, 10,000 ducats could be just the beginning.
Assuming I was interested in this job, there are some obvious difficulties. What about appearance, for example? How similar are the prince and I in looks? There's a limit to what I can do with makeup.
Oh, that won't be a problem. I have a small talent for sorcery. A simple glamour spell and you'll become an exact double of the prince. Much more important is your being able to convince Victor's friends and family that you are who you seem. For that, we need an actor of your considerable talent. Our agents have been traveling throughout the land, searching for someone suitable, and you can imagine how delighted we were when word came back to us that you might be available. To be honest, we hadn't even heard you were in Redheart.
Every career has its ups and downs. If you'd asked me this at the same time last year, I'd have had to turn you down. The pressure of work was just too great. But, luckily for you, at the moment I'm at liberty to give you my full attention.
This time last year, you were in a debtor's prison in Hillsdown. You haven't appeared in a major theater in almost 3 years. You're just another strolling player, Jordan, and if you don't want this job, we can find a dozen just like you to take your place.
There is no one like me, Argent. I'm the great Jordan, and if I hear one more word out of you that I don't like, I'll double my fee. Now, Roderick, this glamour spell that's going to make me look like Victor, can it be removed easily when the job's finished?
Of course. Now, my dear fellow, we are in something of a hurry. It will take us at least a week's hard traveling to reach Castle Midnight, and the rituals are due to begin shortly after that. I'm afraid we must insist on knowing your answer now.
10,000 ducats. Maybe more. A chance to start over again. A role that could be a real challenge. Jordan knew there had to be a catch, but 10,000 ducats?
I'm your man. We can leave as soon as I've bought fresh provisions.
We already have everything you'll need. Roderick, start the spell. We've wasted enough time in this filthy hole.
Ooh, wait just a minute. You want to cast the glamour spell right here and now, where everyone can see us?
No one will see us in this light. The spell is quick and quite painless, I assure you. There's nothing at all to worry about.
Jordan looked suspiciously at Roderick. There's nothing to worry about was the kind of thing the traveling dentist said as he knelt on your chest and poked his pliers into your mouth. But he couldn't argue. He'd agreed to take on the role, and the spell was a necessary part of it. He had just thought he'd get a bit more warning. Roderick took Jordan's silence for assent and raised his left hand.
Clap to our tensor.
Jordan caught a twinge of electricity in the air as Roderick muttered, and he wondered if perhaps he'd made a mistake after all. Count Roderick locked eyes with Jordan and made a sharp twisting motion with his left hand. Jordan's skin suddenly began to itch and creep. His face twitched convulsively. He started to lift his hands to his face and found he couldn't. His whole body had locked solidly in place. He couldn't even blink his eyes. He struggled furiously, to no avail, and then his anger gave way to panic as the first changes began. His bones creaked and groaned. His flesh shuddered, rising and falling like a series of ripples on the surface of a pond. He tried to move or run or scream and couldn't. His panic rose another notch when he found his breathing was becoming increasingly shallow. Sweat poured off of him. His vertebrae popped one after the other as his back stretched, giving him an extra 2 inches in height. His fingers tingled painfully as his hands grew long and slender. New cords of muscle crawled along his chest and arms and back. His legs grew thick and sturdy. His face trembled as his features lost definition and then grew firm again in a new shape. And as suddenly as it had begun, the paralysis was gone, and his flesh grew still again. Jordan swayed on his feet, and Sir Gawain was quickly there at his side.
I've got you. How are you feeling?
Strange.
You should. It's because you're a victor now.
Huh?
Jordan stared in something like horror at his hands. He lifted them up before his face and looked at them, turning them back and forth before him. They weren't his hands. The length, shape, and shade were wrong, but the fingers flexed obediently at his command, and he could feel the cool of the evening moving over them. He lowered his hands and looked down at his body. His clothes no longer fit him. He was taller now, and his arms and legs were longer. His shirt was tightly stretched across his new chest and shoulders, and his belt hung loosely about his flatter stomach. Jordan felt a brief surge of vertigo as his mind refused to accept the new body it found itself in, and then the feeling died away as he brought it under control. Jordan was used to being different people at different times. He was an actor. He looked at Count Roderick, who bowed formally.
Your Highness, would you like to see a mirror?
Yes.
Argent produced a small hand mirror from a pocket in his cloak and handed it to Jordan. The face in the glass was traditionally handsome in a dark, saturnine way. The jet-black hair was thick and wavy and showed off the firm, bony plates of the face. The eyes were a surprisingly mild brown, but the mouth was flat and uncompromising. Someone had broken the nose a long time ago, and it hadn't been set quite right. The owner of the face looked to be in his mid-twenties, but there was something about the eyes and mouth that made him look older.
Not bad, actually. This is quite an expressive face, full of personality. I can do something with this face.
Oh, that's good to hear. You're adjusting rather quickly to your new body.
You know, when you said a glamour spell, Roderick, I thought you meant some kind of an illusion.
Illusions are too easily seen through, especially at Castle Midnight. This spell is fixed until such time as it is specifically reversed. Physically, you are now an exact duplicate of Prince Victor of Redheart.
Jordan looked at Argent and Sir Gawain.
Well, what do you think? Will I pass?
No one will be able to tell the difference. You're even beginning to sound like him.
Well, the voice is right, but you'll have to learn Victor's way of speaking. The prince has been away from court for almost 4 years, and we can use that to explain away some differences in behavior, but you'll have to study his background every chance you get. You screw up on this, and we're all dead.
Roderick, I thought you said we had Prince Victor's permission for this little masquerade.
We do.
Roderick shot an angry glance at Gawain. The knight ignored him. Roderick looked seriously at Jordan, and the actor tensed up inside. He knew that look. It was that particular mixture of sincerity and hesitation that meant he was about to be told something necessary, but unpleasant.
The situation at Castle Midnight is rather complicated at present. King Malcolm died 4 weeks ago, some say by poison. His daughter, the Lady Gabrielle, found him dead in his chambers. It's not clear yet which of his 3 sons will succeed him, so it's vital that no one finds out that Victor is ill and vulnerable. Once he's well again, he'll take over the necessary rituals and public appearances, but until then, you'll take his place. It's really quite straightforward. However, should you be exposed as an impostor at any time, Victor's brothers will undoubtedly have you killed. Princes tend to be very sensitive about the use of doubles.
I can imagine. Look, are you sure you can get me away safely afterward?
We'll take care of everything. You don't have to worry about anything but your performance.
So, King Malcolm is dead. All those campaigns he led, all those battles he fought in, and he finally dies in his own castle, poisoned. Oh, a dirty way to die. How long before the news gets out?
So far, the Regent's been able to keep a lid on things. No one outside the castle knows anything yet. It has to be that way. If the news gets out before the succession is decided, there'll be a panic in the land. There might even be civil war, and none of us wants that.
If Malcolm was poisoned, who did it?
There are several suspects, not least Victor's two brothers, Louis and Dominic. But there's no proof against anyone so far.
I doubt there'll ever be any real proof. It was a very professional job. The autopsy couldn't find a trace of poison.
Jordan frowned. He was getting too much information at once to be able to make sense of it. He decided to concentrate on the only details that mattered, those directly affecting the prince he had to play. He sighed to himself. He hated politics, and court politics in particular. Intrigues made his head hurt. He supposed he just didn't think deviously enough. He'd thought hard about what he'd been told so far, and a question occurred to him.
Gawain, you said Prince Victor had been away from court for 4 years. Where's he been all that time?
He was sent into...
The king sent him into internal exile. A minor border city called Kahalimar. Like his brothers, Victor was never known for his self-control. And eventually he went a little too far. It was thought a few years in the backlands might help to cool his blood.
I see. So I'm playing a villain, am I?
Victor's not that bad. He's headstrong and too easily led for his own good, but at heart he's a true prince. I've sworn to protect him with my life.
Jordan made a mental note to talk to Roderick and Gawain separately. Their views on Victor seemed to differ quite a bit, and that might be important. A new thought struck him, and he gave Roderick a hard look.
You still haven't said why you chose me for this job. All right, I'm an excellent actor, one of the best. But there are others almost as good as me, and most of them are much better known these days than I am.
That was part of the problem. If one of your more illustrious colleagues were to suddenly disappear, it would be bound to be noticed. Questions would be asked. However, in your case, well, you understand, I'm sure. And there was one other reason why we particularly wanted you.
Oh, yes? And what might that be?
You're a conjurer as well as an actor.
Wait, but... Oh, of course. The royal blood.
The kings of Redheart were magic users, and had been for generations. Every member of the royal line inherited the ability to manipulate one of the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water. The spreading bloodlines were jealously guarded and nurtured down the centuries, as it was discovered that the purer the blood, the more powerful would be the resulting magic. For a while, the royal line became dangerously interbred, producing monsters and mules more often than normal children. These days, there were strict laws and traditions to protect the magic-carrying bloodlines, and the elemental powers only remain truly powerful in the carefully monitored royal line.
Prince Victor has the fire magic. Whoever is to take his place has to be able to counterfeit this magic convincingly. You're a conjurer, Jordan. A few flames on demand shouldn't prove too difficult for you.
They'll see through it. They're bound to. My tricks are good, but they're still only tricks and illusions.
You're an actor and an illusionist. You, of all people, should realize that no one will suspect anything. They'll see only what they expect to see.
This is true. You've obviously put a lot of thought into this, Roderick, so I suppose you must know what you're doing.
Then may I suggest, Your Highness, that we get a bloody move on. We're pressed for time.
Indeed. I'll just get my things.
Sir Gawain, escort the prince.
Gladly.
They walked in silence. Jordan didn't know what to say to the knight, and Gawain seemed content to leave it that way. They walked quickly through the darkening evening, with not a soul on the streets with them. The houses were silent, and no lights showed past the closed shutters. But Jordan had no doubt he and Gawain were still being watched. People in small towns didn't miss much if they could help it. Jordan sneaked a few sidelong glances at Gawain. He wasn't sure yet what to make of the knight. The man was obviously competent, not to mention dangerous, but there was a bitter, brooding quality to Sir Gawain that intrigued Jordan. If he was going to get answers from anybody in the conspiracy about what was really going on, Gawain looked to be the best bet. It might pay to cultivate the knight. Jordan found his horse still waiting patiently beside the parked caravan at the edge of the town. He wasn't surprised. He didn't even hobble his horse these days. He didn't have to. Smokey was well-trained and too lazy to go anywhere she didn't absolutely have to. There was a time Jordan had worried someone might steal her, but of late the ominous runes and curses he'd painted on the sides of his caravan kept everyone at a respectable distance. After the war with the Demon Prince, even footpads and outlaws had discovered a new respect for the supernatural. Jordan looked proudly at the runes he'd painted. He hadn't a clue what they meant, but they looked great. He glanced at Gawain, who was studying the grazing horse. His gaze suggested that he was used to companions who rode a better class of animal. Jordan had to agree that Smokey wasn't exactly pedigree stock. She was mostly brown, with white patches, and reputedly even older than she looked. On a bad day, it was all she could do to break into a canter. But she pulled the heavy caravan for hours on end without complaint, once he got her moving, and she accepted resignedly the occasional hungry days that were a part of every strolling player's life. Though having Smokey around meant he could keep the strolling part to a minimum.
Hey, Smokey, got a little treat for you. Here you go. I saved you a little carrot. You want? Yeah, it's a good carrot. I could do with a little thanks from you, though. Didn't think so.
Smokey chewed while staring vacantly into the distance. She was an ungrateful animal, but Jordan was used to her little ways. He made to harness her up to the caravan, but Gawain stopped him with a raised hand.
You needn't bother with the caravan. You won't be needing it.
What do you mean I won't need it? How else am I supposed to carry all my stuff? There's my stage, the costumes, the props...
We'll supply everything you need to be Prince Victor. Everything else gets left here. No arguments, Jordan. We know what we're doing. You can't afford to be found with anything that might give away who you really are.
But what about Smokey? I won't leave her behind. She's a good horse, in her way.
Good? We can always say your usual mount went lame. Now then, if you look in the back of your caravan, you'll find a parcel containing a set of Prince Victor's clothes. Get changed, and don't take too long about it. I want to put a few miles between us and this town while there's still some light left.
You put these clothes in my caravan before you'd even talk to me. You must have been pretty damn confident I'd agree to this.
Roderick wanted you, and he usually gets what he wants.
Jordan had several quick answers to that one, but decided it might be politic to keep them to himself for the time being. He started to unlace the back flaps of his caravan and glanced irritably at Gawain.
You don't need to hang around, you know. I'm quite capable of getting dressed on my own.
Think of me as your bodyguard. Anyone who wants to kill you has to get past me first.
A gray-haired bodyguard. Just what I always wanted. You're not fooling anyone, Gawain. You're just here to make sure I don't change my mind and run out on you, right?
Of course. We can't have you running around the countryside wearing Prince Victor's face, can we? That could prove very unfortunate.
Yes, your little conspiracy would sink without a trace, wouldn't it?
I was thinking more of how unfortunate it would be for you, Jordan. Because if you were dumb enough to run out on us, I'd track you down and kill you. Don't let the gray hair fool you, lad. I may not be as fast as I once was, but I'm twice as mean when I'm annoyed. And don't make the mistake of thinking you're irreplaceable. We can always find another actor if we have to.
Not like me. I'm the best.
Gawain glanced briefly at the small, shabby caravan with its peeling paint and mismatched wheels.
Sure you are, Jordan. You've just come down on the world like me. Now hurry up and get changed, and forget any ideas about running. I've sworn to protect Victor from any and all dangers, and that includes small-time actors with delusions of grandeur.
Delusions?
Jordan's hand dropped to the sword at his side. Gawain moved before his fingers could even touch the hilt. Jordan felt cold steel against his throat. He didn't risk looking down, but he could swear he felt a thin trickle of blood run down his neck.
Okay, I get it.
No, you don't get it.
No!
Understand me, actor. I swore an oath upon my life and upon my honor to protect Prince Victor. I stood at his side when his father banished him, and I followed him into internal exile for 4 long years. If I even think you're going to be a problem, I'll cut you into pieces. Remember that, actor.
Okay.
Gawain stepped back a pace, lowered his axe, and sheathed it at his side again. Jordan put a hand unsteadily to his throat, and his fingers came away bloody. His hackles rose and a cold breeze caressed the back of his neck. His legs were shaking slightly, as much from shock as fear. He'd seen his share of violence in his travels, and even been in a few sword fights himself when there was no other way out, but never in his life had he ever seen anyone move as quickly as Sir Gawain. He pulled out a handkerchief, cleaned the blood off his fingers, and then pressed the cloth to his throat. He was pleased that at least his hands weren't shaking. He tried concentrating on the 10,000 ducats, but the thought didn't comfort him as much as it once had.
I'll go up and get changed.
I'll be here.
He turned his back on Gawain and climbed up into his caravan. He pulled the leather flap shut behind him and then sat down on his unmade bed and thought hard. There was no doubt in his mind that Gawain had meant every word he'd said. If he tried to back out now, the knight would kill him. On the other hand, there was obviously a great deal about this conspiracy he wasn't being told. For example, what the hell had Victor done to get himself sent into internal exile? Jordan took the handkerchief away from his throat and looked sourly at the blood-stained cloth. Maybe he could sneak up on the knight while he was sleeping. But there was still the 10,000 ducats to consider. As long as there was a chance of getting his hands on that money, he wasn't sure he wanted to back out. He put the handkerchief back in his pocket and looked around the crowded interior of his caravan. The rough wooden walls weren't even varnished, let alone painted, and the floor had disappeared under a confused mess of props and costumes. When he'd been at the top of his career, he'd had dressing rooms that were bigger than this. He looked at the package Roderick had left for him on his bunk and frowned. He'd go along with the others for now. It wasn't as if he had a choice. The clothes turned out to be elegant, richly colored, and a perfect fit. Well tailored, too. Presumably, they'd been made especially for the prince he now resembled. Jordan fumbled a little at the unfamiliar hooks and fastenings and stopped every now and again just to admire a particularly fine piece of attire, but finally, he was ready. He strutted back and forth in the narrow space, sweeping his cloak around him, and wished he had a full-length mirror. He wore his own shirt underneath the long waistcoat, even though he had to leave half the buttons undone. He needed the hidden pockets sewn into its sleeves to carry the flare pellets and smoke bombs he used to counterfeit his magic. He stuffed the pockets as full as he could. He didn't know how long it would be before he'd have a chance to make any more. He strapped his own sword on his hip. Roderick had provided a blade of far superior quality and workmanship, but Jordan preferred to stick with the sword he was used to. And just to be on the safe side, he slipped a throwing knife into the top of his knee-length boot. He'd always been good with a throwing knife. Better safe than sorry, as his dad always said. That left only one item to put on, and Jordan stared at it for a long moment. The chainmail vest stared blankly back at him. Given the circumstances, the vest was a sensible precaution, but he was still reluctant to put it on, as though by acknowledging the danger, he somehow made it real. He shook his head, took off the cloak, and put on the chainmail vest. It was lighter than it looked, but he could still feel its solid weight tugging at him every time he moved. He pulled on the heavy burgundy cloak again, hiding the vest from sight. But it didn't help. Jordan looked around his caravan one last time, as if saying goodbye to a dear friend. Sir Gawain was still waiting for him. Jordan stood haughtily before him and took up his best aristocratic stance. Gawain bowed formally to him.
If you're quite ready, Your Highness, we should rejoin the others.
I trust we won't be traveling far tonight, Gawain. It's going to be bitter cold tonight.
I think the sooner we leave Bannerwick behind us, the better, sire. We aren't the only ones who have agents out in the kingdom.
Jordan nodded reluctantly. He turned to his horse and found Gawain had her already saddled and waiting. He swung up onto Smokey's back without saying anything. Gawain reached up and took hold of the bridle and led horse and rider back down the deserted main street to where the others were waiting. Their horses were fine thoroughbreds, beside which Smokey in her battered trappings looked very much the poor relation.
Ah, you look very well, Prince Victor. Let us be off.
The small party left Bannerwick behind them and headed out into the falling dusk. The evening was still and silent as they made their way out onto the moor. The sun was sinking below the horizon in a mass of blood-stained clouds. Sir Gawain lit a lantern and hung it from his saddle horn so that the small party moved in its own pool of amber light. A cold wind gusted across the open moorland, ruffling the tall heather with a heavy hand. It rose and fell like the slow swell of a purple sea. The thick, smoky scent of the heather made a pleasant contrast to the open sewered stench of the mill town, and Jordan began to relax a little. He'd always liked traveling by night, and the lonely moors held no horrors for him. Bandits and wolves tended to prefer the forests, and he was too old to believe in ghosts. Besides, away from the stage, he liked his solitude. It gave him time to think, to be himself, rather than one of the many masks he wore for other people, on and off stage. The moors had their own stark beauty, for those with eyes to see it, and yet, for once, their open grandeur had no power to soothe his soul. It was all very well playing brave warriors and noble heroes on the stage, but he was well aware that out in the real world, he had none of the qualities necessary to bring off such a role. He was an actor, not a fighter, and he was perfectly happy to leave it that way. In his experience, heroes tended to lead short and very dangerous lives and usually come to a nasty end. Standing up to be counted just made you an easier target to hit. And yet here he was, heading into an arena more perilous than any battlefield, a court torn by intrigue. Jordan decided he wasn't going to think about it anymore for the time being. It just made his stomach ache. He glanced surreptitiously at Sir Gawain, riding close beside him. He wasn't sure whether the knight's presence made him feel more secure or more threatened.
Roderick, tell me about Prince Victor. Just an outline to begin with, to give me a feel for the part. And I'll need to know about his brothers as well.
Of course. You are the middle of three sons. Prince Louis is the eldest. He inherited earth magic by his blood. There isn't much call for earth magic inside a castle, so he spent most of his life training to be a warrior. He favors the sword and is very good with it. In many ways, he was King Malcolm's favorite, but of late he and your father had grown distant. He has a vile temper and won't be crossed on anything. His private life is a scandal. In his position, he could have practically any woman for the asking, but instead he prefers to intimidate and take by force young ladies from the lesser nobility. Many who dare complain are dismissed from court, and their families are disgraced. Few are prepared to make an enemy of the man who may one day be their king. He is known to have strangled one girl when she declared she was pregnant by him. It was never proved, of course, but everybody knows.
Sounds a pleasant chap. What does he do for a hobby, poison wells?
Don't underestimate his support. He's quite popular among the guards and men-at-arms due to his undoubted martial prowess. They tend not to hear the rumors about his other exploits. And as the eldest son, and your father's acknowledged favorite, he's always commanded quite a large following at court.
Could he have killed King Malcolm?
It's possible, I suppose. If your father had threatened to disinherit him because of his behavior, I could see Louis striking back at him in a rage. But poison? No, that's not Louis's style. Now then, your younger brother is Prince Dominic. He inherited water magic by his blood, but he's never made much use of it in public. He's the quiet, thoughtful one of the family, and has an unhealthy interest in sorcery. He's had many teachers, and is rumored to be something of an adept, though again, he's shown little sign of this in public. Dominic has always been a very private person. He's also somewhat, strange.
Strange? That's one way of putting it.
How would you put it?
He's barking mad, and dangerous with it.
Like his brother Louis, Dominic also has a following at court. Dominic is married to the Lady Elizabeth, a very ambitious woman. She hoped to build Dominic's following through a series of well-thought-out political deals. Many of us believe Dominic and Elizabeth to be the prime suspects in your father's murder, though it must be said that so far no proof has been found to lay at their door.
How do I feel about my brothers? Are we close?
Hardly. In Redheart, inheritance of the throne is rather a complicated matter. In most countries, the crown goes to the eldest son, and any other sons get nothing. But here, the king chooses which of his sons he considers to be most fit, and that son inherits the crown. This is a throwback to the days of inbreeding, when many eldest sons simply weren't suitable. The dangers of that time are mostly past now, but the law and custom remain. However, if your father had made a choice, it remains unknown. The will has vanished without a trace.
Since Louis is no longer the favored son, all three of you now have an equally valid claim to the throne. Neither you nor Dominic care much for Louis. He is arrogant and brash, and has always used his position as favorite to lord it over both of you. He, in turn, despises Dominic as a weakling for spending most of his time as a scholar rather than a warrior, and considers you a fool for letting your emotions get the better of you. You detest Dominic, not least because of his choice of wife. The Lady Elizabeth was once close to you, until Dominic won her away.
Oh, tricky. Do I have any friends at court?
Not really. Most of your followers were sent with you into internal exile, and for the most part, they've chosen to remain there until the succession is decided. But Dominic and Louis are also finding themselves more isolated than usual for the same reason. No one wants to be remembered as having backed the losing side.
Jordan rode for a while in silence, sorting out the new information as best he could. It was fine as far as it went, but it wasn't what he needed. If he was going to pass off this impression successfully, he was going to have to know not just the facts of Prince Victor's background, but also the secrets and motivations that underlay those facts. And interesting though Victor's family background was, there was still a great deal he wasn't being told.
Victor's been in internal exile for 4 years. What exactly did he do that warranted such extreme punishment? I mean, you've already told me that Louis once strangled a young woman of nobility and got away with it.
Argent and Roderick looked at each other. Sir Gawain stared at the road ahead.
Forgive me, Jordan. Of course you need to know. It's just not something we normally talk about. In fact, we seem to have spent most of the last 4 years using every bit of influence we had to keep the truth of what really happened from ever coming out. Prince Victor has always been one for the ladies. However, unlike Louis, Victor was normally sensible enough to limit his wandering eye to the servant classes. Such assignations may be deplorable, but they're of no real importance. But, as I said earlier, Prince Victor somehow became involved with the Lady Elizabeth, at a time when she was officially betrothed to Prince Dominic. How they kept it a secret for so long in a court noted for its love of gossip is beyond me. But of course it couldn't last, and eventually Dominic found out. And that was when the tempers really began to fly. The Lady Elizabeth is a charming, beautiful young woman from an impeccable family background. Unfortunately, she is very aware of her assets and uses them exceedingly well to broker influence. She delighted in playing the two brothers off against each other, possibly to determine which would make the better husband, but more likely just because she enjoyed it. Victor and Dominic were on the point of a formal duel when the king finally discovered what was going on and stepped in to put an end to it. He called all the parties before him in a private session and apparently demanded that the Lady Elizabeth make her choice there and then. She chose Dominic. For a time, nothing happened. Victor shut himself in his quarters and refused to speak to anyone, even Gawain. We were all very worried about him. Victor had never been one for brooding. When he was angry, he spoke his mind and let the sparks fall where they would. His continued silence was disturbing. Meanwhile, Dominic and Elizabeth made the preparations for their marriage. The invitations went out, gifts began to arrive, everything seemed perfectly normal. What happened next isn't entirely clear. The full facts were only ever discussed with the king behind closed doors, and Victor still won't talk about it. What is clear is that Victor tried to murder Dominic. He almost succeeded. From all accounts, the king was frantic when he found out. A formal duel was one thing. That at least was honorable, if not strictly proper. But murder? To attempt to strike down one's own brother by stealth and treachery? To steal his fiancée? King Malcolm couldn't put Victor on trial. If he had, the whole story would inevitably have come out, and the royal family would have been brought into disrepute. Malcolm was always very conscious of the family honor. But if he couldn't try Victor, he couldn't let him go unpunished either. And he certainly couldn't have Dominic and Victor living under the same roof any longer. Indefinite internal exile was the compromise he came up with, and it worked well enough.
I was right the first time. I am playing the villain.
Victor was betrayed by a woman who said she loved him. And save your sympathy for Dominic until you've met him. There were demons in the Darkwood that had more humanity in them than Prince Dominic.
Jordan shook his head tiredly. Just when he thought he was getting the hang of the characters of this new role, he kept changing.
All right, that's his family and his ex-love. Anyone else I need to know about?
The Lady Heather Tawney, Victor's present love.
What's she like?
A very forceful lady.
Forceful? That's one way of putting it, I suppose.
Victor met her in Kahalimar. She comes from an old, though fairly minor, noble family, and she's linked her star very firmly to Victor's. She was one of the very few people who followed Victor back to court. The two of them are practically inseparable, and there's no doubt Victor sees her as his main support in these troubled times.
In other words, don't upset her. If she were to turn against us, Victor would throw us to the wolves without a second thought. Heather's agreed to the impersonation. We couldn't do it without her cooperation. But watch your ass, Jordan. Her loyalties are strictly to Victor himself.
Oh, great. Just great. Isn't there anybody in this conspiracy I can trust?
Not a damned one, Jordan. Now you're starting to think like a prince.
Jordan decided not to ask any more questions for a while. The answers were getting too depressing.